Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinkney Show. I am the first pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. You do not quote Deuteronomy 28, starting with the 15th verse here in the state of Michigan, or should I say in Barron County. We had a good week this week. We got Lakeland Hospitals to come to the table, and we had a chance to talk to the CEO and president himself, and he was very humble, and I have to respect that, and I have to thank the audience for all the calls that were sent in. They said they received over 2,500 calls when people calling requesting that they do something about their service, but we were successful. And I have many things that we're going to ask. He was willing to come to the table, and he's willing to do things that we ask him to do. So we'll find out. If not, we'll give him another 2,500 calls. Also, we had a chance this week to talk to the school superintendent about some of the issues at the high school. The thing that I was mostly interested in is the zero tolerance, not only for the children, but for the teachers, the parents, the administration, the whole school. And he constructed a letter on that day and sent it to every teacher telling them that your job is not guaranteed unless you can prove that you're willing to help our children. And also, we had a chance to talk to the chief of police this week. And we, as usual, we had another car chase. The same cop who's responsible for three people being dead was chasing a young man through the streets only because he had a cracked car window. But we're going to show him what we can do. We're going to flood them with telephone calls, tell them that this should never, never happen again. And I tell you, I just want to thank everybody for all the calls and everything that you have done. It's just been something really, really tremendous. But let's listen to a little Martin Luther King for right now.
Of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. Yes. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. Yes. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Yes. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain. And the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. And all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrims cry from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. And let me bring on my co-host, Larry Pinckney. Larry Pinckney, are you there?
I am, brother. Good to hear your voice.
Hey, good to hear your voice. And how is things going?
Well, the struggle goes on. We're fighting hard, and you know what? That's the best way and the best thing that it can be.
Y'all talk to me, Larry, because I always say there's never been a fight that I didn't like. And I tell you, this is one, and you know what I mean when I say this. So
I do.
So that's the most important thing. But listen, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, and then we can bring on our guest, Kalu.
Okay. As everyone knows, I'm the co-host with my dear Reverend Brother Edward Pinckney. My background, to be very, very brief, is that I'm a Black Panther Party veteran and former Minister of Interior for the Republic of New Africa. I am the only, quote-unquote, American who has successfully self-authored my case, civil, human, political rights case to the United Nations from imprisonment, from prison. I am currently the editorial board member and columnist, weekly columnist with the Black Commentator, www.blackcommentator.com. That sums it up in the nutshell, and I believe that we have to struggle, and struggle some more.
Talk to me, Larry. The struggle never ends. That's the way it appears to me, but we got to keep fighting. Listen, this time, why don't you bring on our guest?
All right. I'm very honored and pleased, as always, to have comrade sister Kilu. I call her Sister Love because she's about it all. She's about the struggle, the people's struggle. And she herself is also a broadcast journalist, a prolific writer, and, of course, a veteran of the Black Panther Party. So with no further ado, I turn to our comrade, Sister Kilu. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Brother Larry and Reverend Pinckney. I'm so delighted to be on Pinckney to Pinckney again.
That's right. It doesn't get any better than that.
Thank you so much for inviting me again. And I so wholeheartedly agree that with you that the struggle does continue because freedom is a constant struggle.
That's right.
In that vein, I want to share with you a post I received this morning from Brother Larry. And I was so impressed with it that I requested that I be allowed to read it to you and share it with you. So I'm not going to waste another second. Libyan revolutionaries speak out. The West's war machine won't help us win, by Ken Olende and Simon Asaf. Intervention will strengthen Colonel Gaddafi. Quote, we are against any foreign intervention or military intervention in our internal affairs, unquote, said Abdel Hafid Goga in Libya's second city, Benghazi, last Sunday. This revolution will be completed by our people with the liberation of the rest of Libyan territory, unquote. He was speaking at a press conference to explain how the National Revolutionary Council is attempting to coordinate the rebel cities and administrate daily life. The revolution looks close to defeating a dictatorship that had until recently appeared unstoppable. Colonel Gaddafi's 41-year-old regime now only controls the area around the capital, Tripoli. Gaddafi's response has been brutal. The regime has opened fire on unarmed demonstrations with machine guns and rockets. It has used fighter jets against protests. Thousands may have died in the attempted crackdown. Western intervention would be a disaster. The rebels still have the initiative, and they need to keep it. All the major cities and towns, apart from the capital, are run by revolutionary councils, from Benghazi in the east to Misrata, I may not be pronouncing these words right, in the industrial heartlands of western Libya. These councils are growing in strength. On one day last week alone, some 8 towns set up these councils and declared for the revolution. All observers speak of the efficiency and energy of the councils and the relaxed air of freedom in the areas under their control. In Benghazi, despite food shortages, the poor speak of how they are eating better now than before the revolution. Food and other services are organized on the basis of need. Strategy. Many factories and key installations are under the control of their workforces. Others are controlled by employers who are sympathetic to the revolution or even actively supporting it. The revolutionaries' military strategy has not been to call for Western air power, but to convince the soldiers sent to crush them to change sides. Time and again, lightly armed or unarmed rebels have won over the conscripts. This happened most recently when regime forces attempted to retake the key city of Zawiya, 30 miles west of the capital of on Monday. The soldiers sent in to attack switched sides or surrendered, handing over their weapons to the revolutionaries. Elsewhere, military forces have declared for the revolution after receiving delegations of students and youth groups. Western intervention never delivers what it promises. Even last week, as the United Nations debated the Libyan situation, U.S. diplomats unsuccessfully tried to add a call to use, quote, all means necessary to protect civilians and installations, unquote. In UN resolution terminology, this generally serves as a code for military action. By installations, they mean oil facilities. But revolutionary forces currently control 80% of the country's oil fields. They are not under threat. The U.S. is using humanitarian fears to try and grab these key facilities. Many people can see what a disaster British or U.S. on the streets of Tripoli would be, but still call for the imposition of a no-fly zone or sanctions. This will reawaken memories for people across the globe. These were both used against Iraq before the 2003 invasion. The no-fly zone entrenched the idea that only external military force could liberate the Iraqi people, and more than 500,000 Iraqi children, I remember that, and many more adults died under 10 years of the sanctions regime before the invasion. 500,000 children, I remember that so well. The governments that want to intervene now are the same ones who have been happy to sell Gaddafi the weapons he's been using to attack the resistance. Western intervention of any form would not help. In fact, it would be devastating. It would give Gaddafi a chance to regain support in Libya by posing as an anti-imperialist, and he also poses as a pan-Africanist. We have to let the Libyan people, those were my words, we have to let the Libyan people make their own revolution, and that's the end of that particular article.
That's a nice article.
It is. Well, Larry,
yeah, I mean, that article is actually really saying something. But, you know, here's what I know about Gaddafi. There was this guy named Jeff Ford. He was the leader of the Blackstone Rangers in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
And you may have heard about the Blackstone Rangers, one of the largest gangs in the nation at that time. And Jeff Ford was a genius. You know, people didn't look at him because he didn't have a college degree or anything like that. He never attended college. But he organized and set up channels. Gaddafi sent him $5 million. $5 million. And what he did with the $5 million, he set up a trucking company and put about maybe 800 to 900 people to work. And when he took the money, he accepted the money. After he had set up this program for everybody, the government came in and arrested him. I'm pretty sure he have died in prison, whatever it was. But I haven't heard anything about him. Heard about his son and stuff like that. But him. But on that moment for him to send Jeff Ford that money, and Jeff Ford was not one of my heroes. But the point was, they sent him that money, and what he did with the money was the thing that really got me going. It really got me excited because he didn't use the money all for his personal use. He set up jobs for people.
Well, you know, Reverend Pinckney, I can tell you, I'm old. I'm 71 mm-hmm. years old, and I've been paying attention, pretty close attention to what's going on since 1968.
Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that I was a Gaddafi supporter. I was a Gaddafi fan.
Mm-hmm.
I read the Green Book years ago.
Yes.
Gaddafi is a loose cannon
yes.
who has become
yes.
dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
He is the living example of the old adage, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. He and Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
They started out as revolutionaries. He liberated
right.
Libya from the Italians and the U.S., but on the other hand, he's in bed with the Italians and the U.S. today.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why they haven't came in yet. That's the reason, the only reason, because he's in bed with the United States.
They don't know what they have to do
yeah.
except covertly stir up trouble. And what I see them stirring up, and I may be wrong, but my best guess is that he's using his Pan-Africanism, which he's been touting for 40 years,
mm-hmm.
to encourage blacks to remain loyal. He's pitting blacks against blacks because that's how he's maintained power in Libya. Libya doesn't really have a government as such,
mm-hmm.
a parliament or anything. It is
okay.
It has committees that are, but the government is Gaddafi. And
yes.
the bottom line is he has pitted one tribe against another. And you can call them families, clans, tribes, whatever, or groups. But he has done that all over the continent. He has managed to stir up trouble. And he comes out with revolutionary rhetoric whenever it suits him. He also comes out with insanity. I mean, craziness.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a madman and he's a dangerous madman. He's a megalomaniac at this point, and I think that I was so happy to see this revolution this post, because it's very encouraging to know that the revolutionaries of Libya, they know what they're doing. And this is
right.
Another thing. I think we tend to be too arrogant in the United States. We tend to think we've got all the answers to other people's problems, when the people of those countries, they know what their problems are. I mean, how would you feel in the black community if somebody came from a foreign country telling you what you should be doing to rebel against the oppression that the black community is feeling in America?
Hey, you know what? I agree with you 100%. And
who
one
knows
of the things,
better?
That's right. We know better. Yeah, if you live in there, you know
of
what
course.
You want. You know.
I think people need to kind of step back, and when something rings true, hey, spread it. But if it doesn't, that's what I do anyway. I don't spread
right.
it if it doesn't ring true to me.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. How do you
Go
feel?
Ahead.
This is what I'm thinking. And Larry, you can tune in on this too. I was thinking that this whole thing with Gaddafi now is CIA driven. And but I'm always excited when I hear about revolution. I love to see people rising up. But I believe, this is my way of thinking, and I don't have to be correct about this, I believe that the United States got their hands right in here and got the CIA actually instigating this whole matter.
Well, that could be. I can't say it's not.
Mm-hmm.
I know their fingers are in the pot.
Yeah,
there's
absolutely.
No question about that. However, I think that they were caught off guard, and I think because the spontaneity of the Tunisian and the Egyptian revolution caught them by surprise. They just really didn't figure on that, and Gaddafi didn't figure on it either. And he it was the boldness, the audacity of the Tunisians and the Egyptians that aroused and evoked and inspired the Libyans to revolt against this dictator, who has managed to stay above the fray, so to speak, to behave as a revolutionary and not a dictator, to convince people that somehow or another his dictatorship was okay.
Let me also pipe in, if I may, Congress,
yes, please.
And Reverend Pinckney.
Yes,
let me preface my statement by saying I too, years ago, began as a strong supporter of both Muammar Gaddafi and of Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe. However,
right.
the reality is today in the 21st century that people cannot put themselves in positions and simply stay in those positions for life. The people, and when I say for life, I'm talking about 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. No,
exactly.
That is not a democracy. That is not a democracy. That is not people power. And we need to have people power, and I don't care who it applies to. I don't care what their color is, black, white, brown, red, yellow, or an off-shaded turquoise. We must have the people must have the power. And with respect to the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, has an expression that it refers to as blowback. Blowback, in simple terms, simply means that the CIA will get itself involved in things, cause horrendous things to take place, but then they have no control, i.e., thus your blowback. Now, let me give an example. An example would be Iran. When the CIA, working with British intelligence, and no doubt the Zionists as well, manufactured and overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran. We're talking about, almost over two decades ago. Democratically elected. Okay. They did the same thing in Chile with President Allende, the CIA, AT&T, the Zionists, etc., all banded together. But you see, the problem with the CIA, as Comrade Sister Kilu said so clearly, is that the CIA has its fingers in everything. It's sort of like the FBI over here. The CIA has its fingers in every pot But even with all of its fingers in all of these pots all over the globe, they do nonetheless not only get caught off guard, but get totally caught off guard because they, unlike us, they do not believe in the people. They do not respect the people. Or
they don't
the
have
wishes.
Faith in the people.
They don't have faith in the people. That's right. So, yes, of course, to some degree, the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, and other intelligence agencies, of course they're involved. That's what they do, no matter what the country is, even if it's a European country. That's what they do. But we cannot allow this to blind us. We have to have principles in our struggle, and our principles must put the people first, not
the
government, but the people. Black, white, brown, red, yellow, just like over here. We have what I call, and what others call, cultural nationalism, where people come up with this thing saying, well, if he or she is black, then they're all right. Well, haven't they ever heard of the bloody dictators in various parts of Africa like Mobutu, or in Haiti like Papa Doc, like Duvalier? These people were black. We must be principled in who we support. And it's not that difficult. We must always support the people, the wishes and desires of the people. And I agree with that communique. The U.S. must stay out of, okay, covertly and overtly, must stay out of Libya and allow the Libyan people. In fact, we must demand that the Libyan people be allowed to handle their own affairs and carry on their own struggle. That's our best way to support them.
And, you know, that's like, you know, telling the United States to stay out of something like this is too incredible. knowing the United States.
Yeah.
They already in there, and they already decide who's going to lead that country. They already making that decision because I heard on the news that President Obama, your buddy, first thing came out of his mouth that Gaddafi must go. Okay.
Who's buddy?
I can't call him your buddy because we know that, you know, that the way, but to make my point, what I'm saying is that we know for a fact that, you know, but how could he have lasted all these years without the help of the United States?
Right.
It's not even possible. You know, he's been in control for over 40 years. And if you're going to be in control and a dictator, I mean a real legitimate dictator, that's what he has been. Nobody rises up against Gaddafi, not in that country.
Mm-hmm.
But now what you have now, You have these people, this could be a real revolution if the United States stay out of it.
We don't, let's hope they do.
Yeah.
Yes. Do we have enough time to share a very brief commentary by Mumia Abu-Jamal?
You go right ahead. Then Larry, you go right in after that.
Okay. Well,
okay.
I just wanted to say I got a phone call from Mumia yesterday, and I hadn't heard from him in a long time, and I was so happy that I was close to the phone. And I just wanted to share with you the fact that he's fine, that he has his sense of humor is intact, and he's just a beautiful brother, and he should not be. Oh, he was joking. We were joking about using mimeograph machines as opposed to Facebook. And, of course, he does, as brilliant as he is, a brilliant journalist, and he doesn't know anything about the Internet because he was captured in 1981. Okay?
Mm.
And it's still on death row, and we must bear that in mind. So he wrote this commentary on February 26th, Revolutions to Come. As fires of rebellion and resistance flash through ancient Arab cities, the nation's pundits, especially those of the rightish variety, warn us of impending doom in the form of rising gas prices and the bugaboo of near hysterical proportions, Islamists. But there's a funny thing about rebellions and revolutions. They may begin one way, but no one knows where they will end. That's the true nature of revolutions. The voice of America's pundit class have apparently forgotten that the founders that they like to revere and praise as prophets of freedom were, well, revolutionaries who stood against the most powerful empire of the age, the British, with a little help and money from the French. The very notion of having a nation without a king was, well, a revolutionary idea. That's why when France had its revolution a few years later, the crowned heads of Europe got together, conspired really, to beat them into the ground. For back in those days, the conventional wisdom was that kings and queens ruled by the will of God, hence the divine right of kings. The American, French, and Haitian revolutions put a real dent into such notions. Abe Lincoln, speaking as a congressman in 1848, told his fellow members, quote, "It is a quality of revolutions not to go by old lines and old laws, but to break up both and make new ones," unquote. I'll drink to that. The forces rolling today in several North American and Persian Gulf countries have been held in check for generations by powerful, repressive, and ruthless governments, many of whom have been staunch U.S. allies. The forces which have been unleashed in recent weeks threatens to upend many, if not most, of the old relationships and understandings that form the basis of U.S. Mideast policy. Remarkably, none of the quote-unquote experts on the region, few of the scholars, and virtually none of the talking heads on tape, TV, and cable had a clue until the dam broke and the boiling rage burst forth. We have no idea when or where these forces will dissipate. They may radiate for years. They may indeed spill out into other areas of the world. That, too, is the nature of revolution. Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Wow.
Next time you talk to him, you give him our love. Let him know that you know, we love him. And I would love for him to. I know it might be difficult to call into the show one day, even from where he's at, Death Row. I think that would be beautiful.
That's right, but see, I don't think he can time it.
No.
And almost every time I've ever gotten a call from him, it's been around 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday. Okay.
Wow.
Or Saturday. Yesterday was Saturday, right?
Okay.
The weekend. Yeah.
Well, you just let them know that we love them, and let them know that you know we're right in the middle of the fight for them, and we're going to do whatever we can. I know myself, and I know my brother Larry, and I know that you know that we're gonna fight until the end.
I know
that. Right
on.
Larry, is
all
that
right?
Time.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Brother Mumia Abu-Jamal, who is a political prisoner and has been for many decades now, why don't we move right on to yet another political prisoner, who is Lynn Stewart. We're going to move to the Lynn Stewart moment. Lynn is 71 years of age. She's a grandmother. She's outspoken, has been the beloved outspoken people's lawyer, a real lawyer. Not no bourgeois half-step and jive time. Let me just keep quiet. Lawyer. She is in prison as a result of trumped-up U.S. government charges of, quote, conspiracy and providing material support to terrorists, unquote. She is both feared and she's hated by government authorities due to her tireless efforts as an attorney, a people's lawyer, to successfully defend clients who were political activists and others whom the government deemed as undesirable and or enemies of the state. Lynn has been in prison now for well over a year and is currently serving a sadistic 10-year sentence at Carswell, at Carswell Federal Prison near Fort Worth, Texas. And I'm going to leave it at that because we have someone who's with us on a weekly basis for a special update on Lynn Stewart. We're going to turn now to her lifelong companion and her beloved husband, Brother Ralph Pointer. Ralph.
Yeah, right on, Larry. And one of the things I'm going to do when I speak to Lynn is to use few of those fine words you used on her introduction that would say not fit to print, but well to be said. And thank you very much. And Reverend Pinckney, I'm going to ask you if I can send out to the Lynn Stewart Defense Committee list thank yous for the email and the calls they made out there to Barron County Hospital. Would that be proper to say?
Absolutely.
You know, like,
that would, matter of fact, I was going to send something out to thank everybody because I tell you, it's tremendous. I really appreciate it. But also, I don't want to steal no time from you, but we're going to hit this police chief with the next round because it actually works. So you go ahead and go and continue, and I tell you, I don't want to steal no time from you, so take your time.
Okay, Larry, on the film, fabulous. You opened it and closed it perfectly, succinct and to the point. And as I said, I can't see them allowing this thing to be put out. And I, in a joking way, said, hey, let me be on the list to present this film to New York because I know
you are.
That's going to be a fight. Because that is so much exposure of this American government and, you know, the history of it in one film. So congratulations, Larry. That was great. And
thank you, my brother. Thank you. And I'll tell the audience more about it later. But you go ahead.
And on Lynn, you know, one of the interesting things that came up in the Lynn Stewart trial was a CIA report on Hosni Mubarak, one of the most oppressive governments in the world. And in that report, they said, and it was introduced in court, Hosni Mubarak's criminal regime will never be overthrown without a violent revolution. This was a CIA report. And so now we see that we don't know yet. We don't know where, you know, we know where it started. We don't know where it's going to end. And on Gaddafi, I was asked to go before a group of Libyan students who came to New York, or Libyan supporters of the revolution who came to New York and called for a demonstration in front of the UN. And a very few people showed up. So somebody said, Ralph, what happened? And I says, I will explain to them how Gaddafi was a hero of ours as one of the few people who stood up against the Americans in the UN in the early years, and how much money he had sent to America. He also sent money to the Muslims to get their fish industry started. And so he was a hero. But as Lynn says, you know, you men, when you get old, something funny happens to you. And if you have all that power in age two, it can be a problem. And as Lynn wants all of us to do, as the jailhouse lawyer, premier jailhouse lawyer, who has office hours inside the prison in Carswell, she has gotten to be able to read over a lot of the paperwork of the people in jail. And she says, it is a crying shame that the women in prison that could have been helped and shouldn't have been there if they had been supported by decent lawyers. And she wants to do something. She doesn't know what. But she says as she reads over the cases every day, there must be an attempt, when we talk about political prisoners, of getting women out of prison, women who have never been and are not a threat to society, out of prison before their situation of leaving children behind make children a threat to the society because of their neglect. So I'm thinking on that, and I just wanted to mention that. And as we had talked about last week in Madison, Wisconsin, as I say, and I was listening this morning on the news to hear Randy Weingarten, the president of the American Federation of Teachers, I hear again the sound of silence. And there has been a silence on the left in discussing the war and what they're going to do about the contradictions we find ourselves in, the miseducation of children on the inner city. And now the teachers and the people in the union find themselves without the active participation of the people because the people have been let down. They supported the teachers in the early 60s. I know I was there, you know, organizing the black community, and now we find out that now they need help. The unions need help. But you're not going to find many takers who we have lost two generations since the 60s in the prisons because our children cannot read, write, and count, and we know there is nothing wrong with them except the system, the miseducation system in America. So I'll continue. Lynn is in great spirits, as you can see. Who would be in jail, and what is she talking about? Getting something started. And we have the church in New York. I just spoke to the Episcopate, one of the churches, St. Mark's Church, as we were talking about, Larry, over the phone. is taking on in their spring festival to do a an arts thing, to do a play based around some of these women's stories, to make it real. What is happening in our prisons? Women, like, no threat to society. And Lynn is writing letters to attorneys from inside the jail, which will make her upset, make the attorneys upset. And she talks to them about their malfeasance. And is and I'm going to be so happy to tell her what you said, Larry. No jive time, you know, and all of those other words that we can't, you know, say over the air. Lawyers who did nothing for their clients. And there she is in jail reading the papers. And she says, you be sure to get that out there. But I also want to say, you know, if you get a moment, and do you have the paper in front of you, Lynn's address in Carswell, Texas? Because I'm sitting here, and I don't have the address right in front of me. And
I can find it real quick.
Okay, I will read it in a minute. But Lynn, she has lost 28 pounds, and she's working, you know, like in the prisons, and she is just, you know, it's just, I feel, as she used to always say, visit a political prisoner if you have opportunity. And I visit once a month. And the when you come away, you feel uplifted by the people who are in jail. So if you have your any opportunity to visit any political prisoner, like Momia and Sekou Odinga and just so many others. But here's Lynn's address. Lynn Stewart, Federal Medical Center, Carswell, Carswell, 53504-054, Unit 2N, P.O. Box 27137. That's 27137, Fort Worth, Texas, 76127. And the interesting thing is, the minister from St. Mark's Church tried to visit Lynn 2 weeks ago, and she was went to the prison, and they didn't let her in. And then they told Lynn later that what had happened was the mail room of the building that handled the mail prison had a fire, and they don't know what happened to the applications. And so Winnie Farghese did not get in to see Lynn, and she went back the following day. She went back Saturday and Sunday, and this was the answer they gave Lynn. And Lynn says, this is what makes you so crazy in prison. They say anything. She said, they make it up as they go just to dismiss you, and then there's no straightforward way of appealing their decisions. So she says she's still working on it, and I talked to Winnie Farghese this morning, and she says the diocese in Texas is working on it to say, what in heck is that? Because she still hasn't heard anything about her application. And one of the things in federal law that they say they do pay attention to, that you have a right to your minister. You have a right to people coming in from whatever religion. Now, Lynn is not a Christian, but she understands and participates in the camaraderie, in the fellowship of the Christian, of a Christian church, a well-known activist church. She would be in your church, Reverend, if she were out there in ministry.
We could use her, too.
Yeah. So I'm going to have great news to give to her when I speak to her again. This is Lynn Stewart, Federal Medical Center, Carswell, 53504-054, Unit 2N, P.O. Box 27137, Fort Worth, Texas, 76127, and write to her about your ideas, about what she could possibly do or what form the organization should take to support women in prison. And it's the poor, the black, the brown people. As you say, Larry, white, yellow, brown, red, these, but all poor, are in jail. And she says, a decent lawyer, they wouldn't have been there. And it's unjust that they're in there. And when she sees the children come in to visit their parents and reads their cases, she says, this is a major tragedy that has slipped by most of us in the left. So if you could write, talk to her about that. And thank you so much, Reverend, for allowing me to get this in here. you know, to speak, and I was in his diary, as you mentioned, how the CIA got in there and overthrown Mogadish in Iran to get that oil. And I'm saying, yes, they're always poking their nose in, but they don't know where it's going to come. And I'm concerned about our struggle here in Madison, Wisconsin. I do not hear general strike, and I do not hear I will not serve. The anti-war, the missing of the anti-war movement. I think, Larry, your film says it best. I'm not even going to try to get into that. When they talk about how the Democratic Party pulls all the left in, I'm waiting for whatever date that comes out, and that will be one of the first things I'd like to get involved in, is getting that movie out to the people, because I think it says it all. And with that,
right on.
It's thanks again. Really appreciate it. And the struggle continues. You have to love struggle, and we have to begin to get involved in struggles of consequence. Aaron Dottie Roy says it best. Americans are much involved in struggles and demonstrations of no consequence. You go to the demonstration and you go home. And
okay.
I heard they're going to put them out in Wisconsin. I don't know what happened, but I'm still waiting for the words. End the war. I will not serve. And, you know, general strike. These words. The left doesn't seem to be able to form around their lips. I know we have March 9th, that we're not going to buy anything.
That's
as close as we come, and I hear a lot of nays from the left. I know we're going to do it, Reverend. You say March 9th, we're not going to buy anything.
Nothing, not a thing.
Go ahead.
Okay, listen, on that note, let's bring in Libby. Libby, you're there.
Okay, yes, I am. This is from the Herald Palladium. Am I being heard all right?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, the Herald Palladium newspaper from Berrien County, Michigan, and this was from Wednesday, March 2nd. A police chase that started in Benton Township Tuesday morning ended in the city of Benton Harbor with two policemen injured and one man taken to jail. Before I continue reading, I just want to say, please notice in this article how they exaggerate everything to make what you're going to hear is a minor infraction, not even worth mentioning infraction, sound like it's, you know, some kind of a murder case. The pursuit ended on Columbus Avenue at Foster after the car that was being chased by Benton Township police hit an unmarked city police car that was not involved in the chase and three parked cars. Benton Harbor Police Detective Wesley Smigelski and Berrien County Sheriff's Deputy Mark Hopkins were together in the city police car on unrelated business when their car was hit by the fleeing vehicle. They were taken to Lakeland Regional Medical Center in St. Joseph by Medic One ambulance and were released after treatment, a hospital spokeswoman said. Commentary that we will add to this article here is, we are thankful that no one was seriously hurt. No thanks to Officer Koza. Continuing, the chase started shortly before 11 a.m. after Benton Township patrolman Wesley Koza tried to stop a vehicle on M39 near Pipestone Street because it had a cracked windshield, Benton Township Deputy Chief Carl DeLand said. He said that as Koza was getting out of his police car, the car he had stopped took off fast. A pursuit began that wound through several streets in the city, ending on Columbus Avenue after the fleeing car hit the city police car and other cars, DeLand said. The driver got out of his car and fled on foot, but was caught by Benton Township's police dog named Jitka. And our commentary here is that cops often use dogs on Benton Harbor residents. We guess they are never used in surrounding white communities. Samuel Willie Brown, 25, of Benton Harbor, was taken to Lakeland Hospital to be treated for a dog bite and then was arrested, DeLand said. He faces charges of fleeing and eluding police, resisting and obstructing police, driving while license suspended and violating probation. According to Michigan Department of Corrections records, Brown was placed on 18 months probation in July after pleading guilty to assault and larceny charges in Berrien County. The Land said Brown had a passenger, and just going on there, let me drop down in this article. She declined medical treatment, he said. And our commentary is, she knows that African-American Benton Harbor residents are mistreated at Lakeland Hospital, sometimes lethally. Reading on, regarding the injuries to the policeman, DeLand said, we're relieved that nobody was seriously injured. It's unfortunate that two officers were injured, but in the big scheme of things, we're grateful that the subject was apprehended. And commentary, it was a cracked windshield. All other cities simply give a citation for this or ignore it. Reading on, Benton Harbor Police Chief Roger Lang said Tuesday afternoon that Smigelski and Hopkins both suffered bumps and bruises. These are the law enforcement guys. That's thanks to Officer Koza, who decided to have this chase. Reading on, Lang said he will be looking into what happened and will talk with Benton Township authorities. Our commentary is Reverend Pinckney and the NAACP will also be looking into it. Reading on, I don't have an opinion because I wasn't there, Lang said. I don't have all the details. I will most definitely look into this and have a conversation with them. He also said that Benton Harbor has specific guidelines in the department's chase policy and that when another department enters the city, they operate on their own policy. And then our commentary is, since the 03 riot, a Benton Harbor ordinance was passed that no law enforcers can conduct high-speed chases in the city. It should be noted that every high-speed chase in Benton Harbor was done not by police, Benton Harbor police, but by Benton Township police. Koza is responsible for the death of a small girl and was also involved in the T-shirt Shern murder. That was both of those were high-speed chases. So, I'm wondering if we've said enough about this at this point. Should I read on, do you think?
You have said enough, but also we're going to start our telephone drive. Next week I'm going to get the telephone number, and we're going to send out an email, and we're going to pound them just like we pounded Lakeland Hospital. But on that note, I got to bring in Mary.
Hey, Reverend Pinckney. Hello, everyone.
How you doing, Mary?
Reverend Pinckney, I've written several articles this week. This is Mary Neal, Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. You know about the Boycott for Justice, that we're conducting a no-shopping day on the 9th of every month throughout 2011. Can you hear me?
I can hear you good. Go right ahead.
Okay. Throughout 2011, it is our protest, a nonviolent, peaceful protest that everyone can participate in. It's a protest against corporate greed and government indifference. So no matter what you protest, whether it's workers' rights need to be improved, environmental protection laws need to be improved, the prison industrial complex that's arresting everybody left and right, including the innocent, whatever your protest is, executions, death penalty, whatever it is, then please take part in the Boycott for Justice, March 9th. That is the title you can look for in your browser, Boycott for Justice, March 9th, 2011. But March 9th is only the beginning because every night of the month throughout 2011 is an opportunity for us to not shop. See, all of these decisions that we object to are actually benefiting corporate America. So we need to address unethical business practices financially.
Not do you have a statement, you know, supporting that, or should we put out our own statements?
I have tried this. I've sent you numerous emails with the statement, Reverend Pinckney, but I'm not
surprised
that you
did not
receive them.
I have received them.
Okay. Well, the last thing that I sent you was a flyer that
mm-hmm.
people can use.
I got that, too.
On my blog, that's free, F R-E-E, Speak, S-P-E-A-K, Blog, B-L-O-G. And my name is Mary, M-A-R-Y, Neal, N-E-A-L. I want y'all to know that besides the 37 missing Georgia prisoners, missing because they were having a peaceful protest for brutal treatment in jail, going hungry, working 7 days a week with no money. And by the way, the prisoners are working the jobs that we no longer have in the private sector. They're working for Boeing Airlines. The list printed said that they're working for Microsoft, which may be why my computer won't work half the time.
Hey, Mary, you got about 30 seconds. Mary, you got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Thank you. Boycott for Justice starting March 9th and continuing every ninth of the month throughout the year. Google, Boycott for Justice, March 9th, Mary Neal.
That's beautiful. Larry, go ahead.
All right, I want to thank our audience, all of them, the thousands out there listening, for listening to the Pinkney to Pinkney program. Stay vigilant. Stay strong. Understand that you are part of this struggle. I want to tell the audience about a powerful film. It's a powerful film expose. The name of the film is Lifting the Veil. Lifting the Veil. Google it. Google it by putting in Lifting the Veil. And then M as in Mary, E, T as in Tanya, A, N as in Nancy, O, I, A. Those are four words, Lifting the Veil. It exposes the secrecy, hypocrisy, and war and racism of the Obama-Biden regime and government. So I want to say to everyone, thank you very much for listening to the program. Get involved. Stay involved. The struggle continues. All power to the people.
Ralph, go right ahead.
Yeah, well, as Lynn says, wherever you are, you can do something to support the struggle. The struggle never ends until we win. So no matter what situation you're in, you have to continue this struggle and let our political prisoners be an example. Say, Leonard, all of the wonderful people, David, Jan, all of the people who fought for this, write to them, and I'm going to have to get a list out there of people to write to. Although the list has been put out by Jericho many times, we have to keep these people aware that we're out here fighting for them. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Reverend. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Mary. Thank everyone. And
thank you.
Gonna,
go ahead.
I'm going to Twitter and find out about
that. That's right, Q.
Yes.
Can I give Jaleel's new address? He's having a hard time. Jaleel Muntakim, also known as Anthony Bottom.
Go right ahead.
Email.
Yeah, 77 Anthony Bottom.
And we're sending it out on our list. Hello?
Can I go?
Go ahead.
Okay. His new address is 77A4283. That's his number. That's not new. 77A4283, Attica CF, ATTICA CF, P.O. Box 149, Attica, New York, 14011. And please send him some love because they're giving him a real hard time. They've double bunked him and stuff and, you know, transferred him to this Max, and he's not happy. He's not a happy camper at all. So please send him some love. And also, we have two birthdays coming up. Rochelle McGee, who's like, I think, 48 years in prison now, who was Angela Davis's co-defendant ages ago and is still in prison. Rochelle McGee, please send him some love. His latest address is A92051, A as in apple, 92051, 3A2-131, box 3471, Corcoran, C-O-R-C-O-R-A-N, California, 93212. And then Ugo Pinel, you can get his off the website, H-U-G-O-P-I-N-E-L-L. His birthday, he'll be 66. Rochelle will be 72. And both of them have spent well over 45 years now in prison.
Wow.
And they are political.
Is this a new address for me, Shall, or the same one?
I think it depends on how new. Because he...
I'll look it up.
Yeah, and we'll deal with that. On that
like
note...
Newer than the other one, because he had he had two addresses at Corcoran, an old one and a new one.
And listen, this is the Reverend Edward Pinckney, and I want to thank everybody who took the time out to email Lakeland Hospital, known as the Killer Hospital. But we got another mission that we got to fight. The struggle continues not only here in Benton Harbor, but around the country. So we must take our time and stand up and fight for what is right. And we can do this thing. I tell you one thing that we must do. We must do it together. We must work together, and we must try to free our political prisoners. And we can do it. But on that note, we have no more time. Bless y'all. Good job. Good job, everybody.
Love you all.
That's it. And hoping that, you know, we all come back on next week. Let's see, can we do it again?
Right on.
Take care, everybody. God
you
bless
too.
Y'all.